Welcome to the To Faithful Men podcast. This project started in 2006 to preserve old sermon and study tapes of Wiley Flanagan, Hassel Wallace, and Mike Strevel. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also."
And his countenance was as the sun shineth in his strength. Now, when Peter, James, and John was upon the mount, which we now call the Mount of Transfiguration, the expression, according to Matthew 17, verse 2, is that his face and his garments shone, you know, as the brightness of the sun, you know. Right? John sees him again and beholds that imagery, because you see John went to sleep. He didn't get to see much of that when they were on the mount, see. The Lord, Moses and Elijah came and they talked with Jesus. And they talked about his death, about his crucifixion that was to take place, and it was soon to be. But the disciples, all three of them, man, they went to sleep. And when they did wake up, they wanted to get in the building business. They wanted to build some temples, you know, for Moses, Elijah, and one for the Lord. But they saw the brightness just as Moses, when he saw the Lord, and then that glory of the Lord resided upon Moses, and he put a veil over his face, you know, in order that the people wouldn't see Moses when that glory disappeared. And because it was a sign of the presence of God. So, well, then in the next verse, verse 17, "And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead." Now you see, that was the expression of Isaiah, same way with Ezekiel. "And he laid his right hand upon me." That doesn't say anything about turning loose of the churches, does it? If the Lord do that, that's not a job. That doesn't complicate the matter. That didn't present a problem whatsoever. "And when I saw him, and he laid his right hand upon me, saying unto me, Fear not, stop being afraid." He was frightened, you see. "I am the first and the last." That's the same as he'd said over here, and the same as Daniel saw, the Ancient of Days, see. "I am the first and the last. I am he that liveth and was dead. And behold, I am alive forevermore." Now, the person that, you see, this person hadn't been characterized. It hadn't been said anywhere that he saw Jesus or the Messiah. See? But he's making Jesus known to John by way of signs, symbols. Do you think he has any doubt to who this person is? Of course, it's the Lord talking to him. He said, "Now I am he. I was dead." And you know these people that preach that God is dead? Well, that's partly right. They just don't go far enough. He was dead, but he's alive. See? And alive forevermore. Not only that, but he's coming again. Over here, when it said, "I am Alpha and Omega," in verse 8, "I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending, saith the Lord, which is, which was," and the normal expression is, "which is to be." See? "Which is, which was." And if you're going to have smooth English, And to carry the thought, you've got to supply the word, which is to be. But instead of saying, which is to be, but which is to come. See, he's coming back. And so it's the same thing here in verses 17. Then verse 18, I am he that liveth and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Amen. And have the keys of hell and of death. Now, in Isaiah, chapter 22, in verse 22, you have the statement, a prophecy of someone having the keys of David. See? The keys of, now, keys, of course, as all know, is an expression, a symbol of authority. And when he said, I have the keys of hell, that's Hades, not Gehenna. It's not a place of punishment. Hades is never was a place of punishment and never will be a place of punishment. Hades is simply a place in itself. Is a place of departed spirits. Yet, the wicked are in, are punished or suffer in Hades. But it's simply because Hades is a place of departed spirits wherever they are. God's children are, their spirits are in Hades. But it's called, when you distinguish it, from suffering, Gehenna, which is hell, see, why it's called paradise. And we'll have that a little later here in the next, well, in the first church age. But he said, I have the keys of Hades, the unseen world. Because Hades is going to give up their dead. Death is going to give up their dead. Death is going to give up the body. Hades is going to give up the spirit. And so the Lord Jesus is assuring John that he has authority. He's the one that was dead, that is alive, and he's going to be alive forevermore, and he has the authority to unlock, to loose the gates of Hades and of death. And that concludes his vision, but then he receives a command to write. Write the things which thou hast seen. Now, John, after receiving this vision, didn't have an idea to write. It wasn't his idea to write this and cause a lot of people a lot of trouble in figuring out what he meant. He wrote because the Lord told him to. He didn't write for profit. He didn't write for curiosity. He didn't write to confuse people. He didn't write to try to tell somebody what's going to be in the future. That's not the purpose of prophecy. And yet prophecy reveals and unfolds the future. But the purpose of prophecy is to produce, first of all, conviction and in the part of God's people, to let them know to reprove and also to comfort in the same message. But he says, write the things which thou hast seen and the things which are and the things which shall be hereafter. Well, now that's very simple, division of the book of this book. The things which thou hast seen, the things which are and the things which shall be. So there's past, present, and future. Now, the great difficulty in with a lot of people in taking this verse is the inability to see anything in the future concerning this the statements. They say all of this was given to these seven churches. Those seven churches could understand the symbols. It was meant for them and for them only. And when they died, the book of Revelation died with it. And it's no more, and has no more relevancy to, for the present day. Then there are those that says, well, all of this, well, it's out yonder in the future. Still out in the future. And therefore, it had nothing to do with the churches, of Asia Minor, other than they were just addressed, to represent this stage of history. Like the first period, the early apostolic period, and then the second period, a period of persecution, then a period of, under the papacy, under Constantine, and then, under the Reformation, and then, the great revival awakening, and then the Laodicea being the day of, the final day of apostasy. The Bible, this passage, this book has a meaning for the early churches. It has a meaning today, and we'll notice that there is history, chronological history, as we move along. But when person or when a group of persons says that now this part is already past, this part is to be, and that part is another age, well then they're taking liberty with this statement here. Of the Lord when he said, write the things which thou hast seen, the things which are, and the things which shall be hereafter. Now when did John write this? Did he write on the Isle of Patmos? Was he equipped? Did he have enough papyrus? Did he have enough paper? Did he have enough pen and ink? He was a prisoner. The history tells us that when Domitian died, that John was released from the island, and he came back to Ephesus, and he lived in Ephesus several years after he came, after he gained his freedom, and he came back to Ephesus and ministered to these seven churches. The Bible doesn't tell us when John wrote this. The Lord told him to write. See, you write it down. Whether he wrote it on the Isle of Patmos and sent it from the island across 40 some odd miles to Ephesus, and then by land to these other, the seven churches, is, of course, just conjecture. But anyway, we've got the book. Now he says, the mystery of the seven stars, which thou sawest in my hand, and the seven golden candlesticks. Up to now, we would know, and without this explanation, we would know what the lampstands really meant. In this book, we know what lampstands were used in the Old Testament for. It was a light, and they used it in the tabernacle, and in the temple, and, Ezekiel's vision, had a lampstand in it, but now he says, the mystery of the seven stars, and the seven golden candlesticks. He's going to tell you, the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. And the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches. And yet, he tells us what the mystery is, and then we still have a mystery. Who are the seven angels? Who are the angels of the churches? Well, everybody gets excited over that and says, well, the word angel in Book of Revelation, I think 63 times, something like that. And, in all of the instances, it refers to a heavenly being. With the exception, unless this is an exception, you see. But now he's writing to an angel. Well, the angels are the stars are the angels of the churches. Well, now if these angels are heavenly beings, why why write a letter and send it to heaven? How did he get it to heaven? Or how did he get an angel from heaven to come down and get the letter? See, I mean, that's what the people get kind of balled up on. But some say this is the guardian angel, that he wrote it to the guardian, addressed it to the guardian of the churches. Others say that the word angel represents spirit being, and the angel in this instance represents the spirit of the churches, so he wrote to the spirit of the churches. He wrote in a message according to the spirit, according to the state, according to the understanding and feeling and moods of the churches, see. But the word angel, I don't care how many times it occurs here, to me, it's the minister, the pastor of the church. If it's not, it's the janitor of the church. It's somebody who's the custodian or looking after that church, see. But nowhere, you know, in the Bible does it call a preacher an angel. Well, now, you know, around this time, my wife calls me an angel sometimes, see. But now, they're not referred to in the Bible as angels, but here, there's no question to me. Well, the reason why they say it's not the pastor, that can't be pastors, because they're not sure where they were at this time, at this age of the church. See? Well, now, Paul had written all of his letters, and Paul had been dead several years when this book was written, when John had this vision. And Paul had given instructions about putting a pastor and bishops or deacons and point elders in every church, in every city. Paul written and addressed them and concerning their pastors and their deacons, see. Well, I believe that there was sufficient time for this church at Ephesus to get the message that Paul had written.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and share with a friend. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.